I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for what is one of the most exciting stages of the year. Giro d'Italia, eat your heart out. Stage 5 from Po to Laurent. We saw this stage in 2020 where it was pretty exciting then with Hirschi in the break ahead of Roglic and Pogacar, where Pogacar took his first Tour de France stage. 162Ks, not that long. Quite a long 70K valley before. These up and down rolling. They're harder than they look. These Pyrenean valleys, speaking from personal experience. Before the Col du Soudé, the first all-category climb of the race, 15.2Ks, 7% irregular too. Also a feature of these climbs, both in this stage and this region. Another descent, valley, Col du Cher, a little 4.2K, 6% warm-up descent, and then the Col de Marie Blanc, fake news. 7.8Ks, 8.4%. 4.8Ks, 10.5% the last 5Ks, and then a descent, and then about 8Ks uphill, a false slide uphill to the finish in Laurent. What did you think would be the goals of each of the teams for this stage, Benji? Like, what would a goal for Ineos and a lot of the teams, like a Bora, like a Groupama, try and your GC guys try and stay with the best guys possible on Marie Blanc and then put a fringe guy in the break to try and win the stage?
It's a combination, eh? Because we know the starting phase, the breakaway formation phase in this stage is seemingly pretty explosive. We saw it 3 years ago. We saw it in stages like that. People want to be in this bloody breakaway. So if you're a UAE, you want a breakaway that is not that dangerous, but maybe you're right around 4 minutes there. That's how I would have seen it. If I was UAE personally, I would have been like, on like a group of 12, 13 riders, maybe a rider in there on 4 minutes that we can give the yellow jersey to so we don't have the weight on our shoulders. That's what I would have liked if I was UAE starting the stage. But there's so many different teams willing to go in the breakaway, like Jumbo Visma. They want to go in the breakaway because Wout van Aert desperately wants to win a bloody stage, and their team perhaps wants to set satellite riders up the road because the stage does have that terrain type. Col du Marie Blanc, you want a rider on top to try and help you, that kind of scenario. But the other teams you mentioned, Bora, Ineos, and Sofov, they've got other scenarios they can play with. Now, I will say that I wasn't expecting the strategy that Bora applied on the stage at all before the stage started, even though I love it. But when it comes to teams like Ineos and Sofov, put riders in the breakaway, hope that they could either go for the stage or that if they're not good enough for the stage, I can help your GC rider get away from other top three, top five candidates. But outside of that, breakaway riders galore throughout.
It was just so much jumping out of neutral. And the problem is there's no like 7% climb for them to just, you know, the best climbers to get away. And
yeah,
so you see Paulus wasting a lot of energy out of neutral. He's jumping with like Campenaerts on the flat. And the first move's not going to just go. Too many teams. It's not like the other sprint stages. Too many teams want to be in the breakaway that, you know, that's just not how it works. That the first move beautifully splits and everyone's happy. Everyone's represented that wants to be in there. And so he missed out. Urán, I think, eventually did get in the breakaway later, but Jumbo were buying I initially saw Van Hooijdonk and Dylan van Baarle trying to get in. Mm-hmm. And then later we saw Ineos wanted to be in. Kwiatkoe was the first moving with Turner. So it was very clear. Jumbo wanted to be in the break with Van Baarle, Benoit, or Van Aert, or even Laporte. They wanted to get Roulers ahead like they did last year. UAE, if Jumbo were in the break, they needed numbers in the break. Yep. That seemed to be their MO too, because wherever Jumbo went, UAE went. And who else? Well, and then how did the break eventually form, Benji? Because like we can't run through every single attack, but I swear there were initial groups off the front with like a Bettiol and Van Aert. Yeah.
There's just numerous splits. One, for example, is a group that was created with Bettiol ahead, and then a second group joined them with Urán, and there was a group with two EF riders. But who closes that? Paulus, EF teammate, because he's got the KOM jersey and he wants that breakaway to have himself in it so we can fight for that. So he basically self-neutralized a breakaway with two teammates in there. And this happened a few times where Paulus was basically going for his polka dot jersey and therefore hinders some other EF riders going into breakaways and also other breakaways that he missed out on, because I swear he was always late at jumping, but in doing so, he brought other riders with him. And usually that was a UAE rider that jumped on his wheel and then closed with the entire peloton in his wheel, the actual breakaway moves. But eventually a large group started to form. Got to mention, Pogacar tried to jump into a breakaway early as well, which I found pretty funny. I like that stuff. It's a sign that he's trying to work out strategies at every point of the race.
No, to me, I saw it as massive weakness.
Massive weakness? Yeah. As in desperately trying to control the breakaway?
It makes no sense. He's trying to jump in and make Jonas know. It's pointless to me, unless you make Jonas panic, because you're not going anywhere with it. Like, you're not going to get in the breakaway, and Jumbo have the rulers there. It's like 60Ks of flat. So I saw it as, yeah, kind of stupid stuff he was doing. Last year was different because it was like rollier terrain, mm-hmm. but yeah. I saw it today as I was like, that's surprising. I thought it was surprising. I wouldn't have personally been wasting energy there. We saw, though, Hindley got on the breakaway. That's the big news of the day, basically, initially. Hindley gets in the break. He was kind of hiding. I think, and this makes a difference, Hindley wasn't shown by the TV cameras for a long time when this break had formed. We saw Conrad at the front a lot. We saw Buchmann in there. Like, there can't be a third boar in there. He was hiding at the back. And at this time, Laporte's pulling the brake.
Yep.
And the brake's gone now. UAE have had Bjerg had a flat at an inopportune time. They've got Lang and Trentin trying to restore some modicum of control.
Yep.
The gap goes to 90 seconds before a lot of the team, well, Jumbo in particular, were like, we can't just pull Jai Hindley all day. And then they tried to create splits. And that's where we saw some more interesting stuff from UAE.
I do have to say, when it comes to this breakaway, is the reason that they don't spot Hindley being in a breakaway so quickly, potentially that Jumbo and UAE are so focused on each other that UAE is saying, okay, you need to make sure you're in a breakaway with every Jumbo rider. We need to have a UAE rider in there. But next to that, there's also other riders in this race, like Hindley, like Landa and so forth. All those like top 3 to top 5 to top 7 favorites that could also have been in this group in the same way Hindley has done. Is it because the focus is so hard on Jumbo from UAE side that they didn't spot that? But also, why is UAE the one that needs to control this? Because they're in the lead with Adam Yates? Because I would say Vingegaard was on paper the better climber on longer climbs. Wouldn't you argue that Pogacar is then the one fighting the man to beat Vingegaard in this tour?
I mean, that's how we see it, but Benji, they don't see the race. They don't see it the way we do. And, you know, a lot of pundits, you know, not just in across the world, they see Pogacar really strong on Côte de Pique. They see Pogacar winning the sprint on Jaizkibel. And they think Pogacar, a lot of people think Grenon was team tactics. And the team tactics, don't get me wrong, they did make a difference. Mm-hmm. But how Altacam gets very, very quickly forgotten that Jonas also just straight up smoked Poggy on Housing.
He's just a better climber on longer climbs.
Yes.
Facts.
But today's not a longer climb.
Agreed.
Today is a climb where Pogacar attacked from the base of steep section in 2020. He won the stage and he, you know, he was attacking Jonas in the Basque Country climbs. Now, this is also not the Basque Country climbs.
Yeah.
This is not a 7-minute, 5-minute VO2 max power test. This is actually much, much longer Marie Blanc, especially the steeper section, and it's consistently steep. So I think they also probably, there is an underappreciation for Vingegaard's Basque Country for performances. I mean, the tour of the Basque Country.
Yeah.
I think people don't, because who did he beat, Benji? Who did he beat? But were the watts on those shorter climbs were big.
Yeah, in the same way that, for example, Pogacar in Andalusia was also impressive. Obviously, his accident happened afterwards in LBL. What if Pogacar was here without that accident? Would he be in a better form than he currently is? Who knows? But we're currently at the start of the race. Hey, we see that breakaway.
But you think UAE should have called Jumbo's bluff?
It depends, eh? Because Jumbo's bluff, let's talk about it. So Hindley's in the breakaway, a group of 36 riders with so many teams involved. Quickstep with 3 riders, Cavagna, Asgreen, Alaphilippe.
Tug buddies galore.
Exactly. EF with Chavez, Ron, Ineos with 2 riders, Fraile Martinez. Then we've got Soler and Grosschartner for UAE. 3 riders from Jumbo, Benoit, Laporte, Van Aert. And then we continue. 3 riders from Trek, Ciccone, Lopez, Pedersen, three riders from Algezer. So there's teammates everywhere. Gulls in there with Berthe, with the likes of Paré-Peintre. And when you see a breakaway that large, it is very difficult to control that breakaway. But we have riders in that breakaway. So they're kind of like hedging their bets on both controlling and being in the breakaway to neutralize it from the inside. Is what you would see from that scenario. But what is the bluff you're talking about? What happens now? Directly after this breakaway forms, UAE keeps pacing in the peloton with Lengen. So they're in the breakaway with two riders. They keep pacing behind. And Jumbo's in the breakaway and doesn't pace behind. So the bluff is Jumbo's not pacing behind and is putting all the pressure on UAE right now. And I think that is the right thing to do by Jumbo at that point, because I was thinking, okay, if you're Jumbo, yes, Hindley is dangerous, but the imminent danger is UAE at the moment. Yeah. So you'd be like, let's try and burn UAE. And if it does get out of control, then you can still adapt to the situation. You want to try and burn UAE and then find a counter towards UAE and try and do something like that. Because if they spend all their riders pacing all day, then you might be able to benefit towards the end.
And also, you know, looking at this stage beforehand, not knowing what eventually happens, you would say, do Jumbo really want to pace all day for Pogacar to maybe take bonus seconds again?
Yeah.
You know, so with the break going up the road, not ideal with Hindley. I did think maybe later they could have put a rider to pace. But anyway, the flies are back irritating me. That's why I'm kind of distracted. Yeah, but yeah, it's Felix Gol is in there. I'm not sure we've mentioned him with two tug buddies, Aurelien Paré-Peintre and Berthe. They were outstanding, those two. AG2R, very, very impressive. And yeah, Benoît Laporte, Van Aert, you mentioned Groschutten and Soler. They were both in the break, not trying to split it up. Because before Soudé, we get the breaks formed. People don't want, like, ideally you don't want Hindley in there. Because Hindley is a serious GC guy. He won the Giro, you know, his form in the Dauphiné where he came fourth, but that was just because of the TT. He dropped O'Connor on the he came third on the Queen stage of the Dauphiné.
We both believed he could podium this Tour de France beforehand.
Yeah, and he was, I think, third or fourth favorite for the Tour. He's a serious guy. You can't just let him, you know, take 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Van Hills is in there with Kamenaerts and co. So Jumbo eventually tried to start splitting this break up because they want riders in the break, but they want to reform the break. The problem for them was before Soudé, Van Aert goes ahead with Kamenaerts, Pedersen, and Cochard, but they don't bring Alaphilippe with them.
Yeah.
And so without Alaphilippe, without AG2R, all of a sudden, Patrick Conrad has two teammates.
Yep.
Rémi Cavagna and Kasper Asgreen pull the Hindley group full.
Yeah.
And so you now have the break maybe going quicker than it would have gone before. You've got Van Aert dangling burning energy 20 seconds ahead before Soudé, and you've got UAE chasing full, and Hindley's getting a free ride.
Yep.
And Buchmann's not having to do anything before Soudé.
And it's actually the opposite of what you wanted to achieve in the first place, because what I would see Wout's plan to be was, like you say, split up the group and hope that Hindley's caught behind in that split. And therefore, the second group has some kind of group two syndrome occurring where they don't really cooperate too well. You've got a group of rulers that is ahead. We see this quite a few times in races. I think on the stage where Matthews won on Monde, he actually got away, got a bit of a gap on the peloton because the group two didn't really work together that well. And that's the kind of scenario you want to achieve if you're Jumbo, because on one end, you don't want to pace behind because otherwise you're blinking.
Yeah.
And you're basically saying to UAE, are we going to pace with you because we're also scared of Hindley? So you want to force the full pressure on UAE. But on the other end, you're also scared of Hindley a tiny bit. And you're like, let's try and not make it easy for this guy. So let's try and hinder him by making split ups in the group and make sure that both Hindley's suffering and that both UAE is suffering behind.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and you just got to bring, Martinez or Fraile with you. You have to bring Gol with you. You have to bring Alaphilippe with you. And
it's difficult, eh? You can't predict that, eh?
No, you stop.
What?
There's a long, you stop with Wout and then you try re-split again.
Yep.
And you try, but also it is very, very difficult to get the right composition, you know, every time. So anyway, Trek were also all in for Ciccone's stage win. Pedersen went for the intermediate sprint points. I thought Pedersen, so we have now the situation. Van Aert, Cochard, Pedersen, Kampenaerts. Pedersen and Cochard do the intermediate sprint. Cochard drops back predictably. Pedersen keeps going.
Yep.
And I thought, why is he doing this? Why is he helping Van Aert? Soudé, he's got Ciccone behind. I realized they were hoping Pedersen could get over Soudé So Ciccone would have a tug buddy in the valley afterwards. It didn't work out that way, but that is why that was happening.
And the same reason it didn't work out was the same reason that Wout van Aert wasn't able to get that goal he wanted either, because while Wout van Aert was also probably trying to gain a gap so that he can actually fight for the stage win, he was trying to split up the group and have Hindley behind and have the Hindley group go slower. Pedersen, same scenario, because they don't have Quickstep and Ajazer, he's also fucked because the gap is not big enough, so he's not far ahead enough on Sudé. And we get to Sudé when it comes to this breakaway. I'd say the gap to the peloton was at this point leaning towards a 3 minutes, 34 minutes roughly, because we've had moments before where it went up and down a tiny bit, but it's been gradually growing over time towards the likes of Sudé. So
and UAE that's weren't a solid panicking. Gap. UAE were chilling, right?
Only Langen and Bjerg were pacing at that point, which at that point I'm thinking Langen and Bjerg are in the peloton. They're pacing. UAE is not panicking at all. If we look at the breakaway and the scenario that's unfolding on Sudé, because then you see that teams are starting to pace. Cavagnas pacing behind the group of Wout van Aert because Alaphilippe wants to get something out of the stage, and Wout van Aert being ahead is not on his book of nice things in this stage. And when Cavagnas is done, Alaphilippe does a bit of a move, but then just keeps on pacing it a tiny bit until we get Trek-Segafredo. No, Little Trek, my bad boys.
Little Trek.
Go to the front, and Juanpe is the man that is pacing there, because Pedersen is also dropping ahead. So that reduces the gap to the front from Ciccone's group to Wout van Aert, but it also creates a situation where behind, UAE also, Langen's losing more time on the climb itself.
Yeah, yeah. Because UAE want to bring Langen and Bjerg over the top of Sudé.
Yeah.
They need those two rouleurs. I think Trentin might have dropped. They need those two rouleurs for the valley. They can't be having Soler pacing. And this is what was curious. Soler drops out of the break.
Yeah.
So Soler had spent all that energy, all that stress to be in the break, to be quote unquote represented.
Yeah.
Him and Groschartner chased splits that didn't have Hindley in it and brought Hindley back. And then they just drop out of the break anyway to pace. It made no sense to me, because Groschartner's, it's not like you need, you do not need Groschartner and Soler to get over the top of Sudé. Okay, with Christophe Laporte or Pedersen or something, you need them ahead because they're not going to make it over the top of Col du Sudé because it's too hard. These guys are good climbers. They're going to make a group of 2025. So to me, I think they were like, we want to be represented with Jumbo because we want to. And then they realized, fuck, we actually need to chase behind.
That's the point you looked at afterwards, eh? That you looked at earlier.
Yeah.
The fact that they were closing splits that were trying to be occurring before Sudé, Groschartner chasing down a four-man group that's trying to get away and so forth. It's good for you that those splits happen. But when it comes to Soler and Groschartner eventually going back to the peloton, I do think that that was a good move. As in, the adaption to actually pull them back was the right move. I do feel like Soler was the one that was waiting. Groschartner felt more like he was dropping, and looking at the work he did afterwards, seemingly he spent quite a bit of energy throughout the stage. So I think it's the right decision to pull them back regardless of the mistakes you make beforehand.
Yeah.
And we're basically towards the top of Sudé now.
Vultures. We just see there were some Griffin vultures on a ledge. That was pretty cool from the heli shot. That was in the notes. I made Benji put it in the notes.
So yeah, we had some vultures. I think that was before Sudé, by the way. But on Sudé, we go towards the top, and Juanpe had that work. Ciccone launches from his wheel towards Wout van Aert and Campenaerts. Those were the remaining two men ahead. Campenaerts strong climbing there, to be fair. But obviously after that, Campenaerts is gone. Wout van Aert holds on for a bit, because that group is now the likes of Ciccone with Hindley, with Gull, with two or three other riders roughly. And Wout van Aert started having trouble from that point onwards in that group. And Benoit was already a bit behind at that point in the race. And we get towards the top, and who's going to fight for KOM? Because Col du Sudé has more KOM points than all the KOM points we had before.
This is the thing with Paulus. Like, I don't know if Paulus was... Is Paulus the man you choose to do the exposure KOM? Like Court did last
not
year?
Not the right person.
He's kind of too good, right?
Yeah.
Like, if he really wanted to go for KOM, first of all, he needs to not jump right at the start of the stage. He needs to be patient. But, you know, was he tired from before? I also think he would have struggled. Like, Felix Gull rode away from the GC group in Tour de Suisse and won the stage. Like, we now have very serious climbers going clear. You know, Gull, Ciccone, Hindley, Bookman's pulling that group as well. So now Jumbo-Visma, they're in, and UAE, they're kind of in trouble. It looks like they're in trouble because the gap is like 3.5 minutes. Hindley's bringing a teammate with him over the top of Soudé. Yep. He's got two guys in goal and Ciccone who will just go for the stage and they will pull with him, and they back themselves against him at his level. And now it's like, fuck, like Hindley could take a lot of time here.
It's a combination here, because as the breakaway is reducing, you're also thinking, okay, if the breakaway actually becomes a four-man group after this climb, then they're weaker in the breakaway. But the other riders are not far behind. Buchmann's not far behind. Hasn't worked so much on this climb. He's done a bit of work on Soudé, but other teams have done it for them, so he didn't really need it to work so far. But because those riders are so close, we saw that those riders start going back. Those riders start coming back one by one. Gull, who end of the front at the top, he's getting caught back again in the descent because, well,
he's bad on the descent.
He's not a great descender, unfortunately. And we get this larger group forming, and then it's a battle between that and the peloton. And the curious case at this point is, what will Jumbo do? Because we've got a breakaway up front, roughly 8 riders, with Wout van Aert and Minot slightly off the back of that group after they dropped on the climb itself. In the peloton, we've got UAE pacing, still with Lehin and still with Bjerg. Bjerg over the top of Soudé, I'm pretty sure. But we've seen in previous stages, I think we mentioned it in stage 2, Jijsgebel, that UAE was pretty meh when it comes to descending with their team and losing gaps in between riders in the corners every descent and so forth. So I expected them to lose more time in the descent. I feel like it was relatively okay the time they actually lost in a descent, but that group ahead, what did you think at that point Jumbo should do? Because one, they're behind the front group. They're not in the front group. They are coming back to the front group in the descent. What can they still mean in this stage? Because Wout van Aert and Benoit have shown that they're not good enough to win this stage.
Yeah, so Jumbo were now in a difficult situation where they clearly want one of Van Aert or Benoit to be a satellite rider.
Yeah.
Because realistically, then, well, both of them can't win the stage. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
And even though hashtag Simon Winnen, so one of them wants to be a satellite rider. But if you don't chase this break and UAE are fucked, do you want to give Hindley more time than he needs? But you also, we're also living in the pre-Marie Blanc world, Benji.
Yeah.
Where we don't necessarily believe, you know, do you want to give Pogacar 8 bonus seconds? And on balance, I do believe they should have put Van Baarle on the front.
Yeah.
To just, because what happens was, did you mention that Van Aert resplit it?
Oh, not yet.
So what they chose to do was try and do what they did before Soudé. Van Aert tries to resplit, goes across the Nalens, Alaphilippe goes with him. The problem again is no Felix Gold with him.
Yeah.
And he has two teammates, Berthe and Aurelien Paris-Pantcha. No Dani Martinez with him. Fraile pulls full. So we have exactly the same situation where teams who want to go for the stage have missed out on this counter move, and Hindley gets to come through and Buchmann doesn't have to pull. So it was perfect for Bora. And UAE weren't really... UAE, they did close it. I think it would go 330 to maybe 240 at the base of Marie Blanc.
Yeah, the gap was indeed lowering, but also you spoke about Buchmann for a second there. He didn't need to pace it all on Soudé because other teams did it for him.
Yeah.
In the valley, there were moments where he was working. There were moments where he wasn't working. And I was like, this is a moment where you should be at the front to at least set some tempo because you want the group to keep cooperating.
I think they gambled. I think he tried once.
Yeah.
And then everyone just kept attacking them. And he's like, if me and Jai keep trying to close moves for 30Ks to Marie Blanc, we're fucked. And so I think they gambled. Maybe they didn't have a choice. And they're like, if a counter move goes, we can get AG to Artipool.
Yeah, but there are also moments like there was a split that happened before Wout van Aert attacked.
Yeah, that was
where where Buchmann was in group one and Hindley was in group two. And Hindley closed group one without the help of Buchmann because Buchmann was staying in group one. That made no sense. Buchmann should drop back, base back that group so Hindley doesn't have to do it himself. Now, maybe they just don't trust Buchmann on the flat. That's also a possibility.
They wanted to save Buchmann to do the lead out or to pace on Marie Blanc, and that's what he's... But, you know, Buchmann is like Kuss. Like, there is really... And he's better on the flat than Sepp, probably, but there is only so much he can do against a Matawaz, even a Jorgensen or a Haig on the flat. You know, he's a pure climber, so... I think
isn't he then the wrong rider to be in this breakaway with Hindley?
But also,
you don't have that choice too much, eh?
You know, they... Of course, yeah, Jungels for the Valley is brilliant, but I think you got to take what you can get. Yeah. I think
agreed.
Anyway, I do think maybe Jumbo could have, but then you put Van Baal on the front, you chew into this gap, you now don't have a satellite rider.
Yep.
After Marie Blanc. So I think that's the line they're kind of trying to dance under. Why are UAE still pacing now Benji full into the base of Marie Blanc? Is it Hindley?
Of course.
I don't think they're still going for a stage?
No, I think it's full on to try and keep Hindley within reach, because we're talking about a gap that is still relatively dangerous for Hindley. Hindley won a Grand Tour. He's not a shit climber. He was a fan favorite for us towards this Tour de France, except for Adam Yates. But when it comes to UAE pacing, it started to become more than Langen and Bjerg, though, right? Because we saw Soler moving up on one of those hills before we got to Marie Blanc to already do some work. We saw quite a bit of other riders doing work, but we didn't have Groschartner yet working at that point. Maika was still there. Adam Yates was still there. Pogacar was still there. So those are the riders that are still left for Marie Blanc. But I feel like when they were pulling towards Marie Blanc, I thought, okay, they've got four riders, Groschartner, Yates, Maika, and so forth. This seems like something they can still control for now. But then you look at the breakaway, and that's where everything started exploding, right? Because Hindley was good, but it was a different team that exploded it.
In the breakaway, Berthe, man, the mountain bike rider. This guy, I think he's still under contract, which is kind of irritating to me. because this is a perfect, until 2025. I think they've extended him already. They gave him a little extension. So this guy is an up-and-coming pure climber that you need to watch out for and really take note down in your little black book. This guy will be winning a big Grand Tour breakaway mountain stage soon. I hope maybe even does the Vuelta, probably too many race days. Berthe shreds this breakaway.
Yeah.
And these are not bad riders in this breakaway. Yeah. Like, he's shredding it. I don't know who he dropped off the wheel, but basically he's taken it from 20 after Frail's been pulling. He drops Van Aert. Oh, sorry. They catch Van Aert. He's gone.
Mate.
Benoit gone.
He was making Buchmann suffer ahead of Hindley.
Yeah, Buchmann lost the wheel.
Yeah, he loses the wheel and Hindley has to close it towards Gull. And then we see that Buchmann takes a position behind Hindley because he still wants to try and be somewhat meaningful on the climb itself. Ciccone was not in the perfect position there. I think he was on sixth wheel and so forth. Would he be able to follow what happened afterwards? I'm not so sure. But when Berthe is off the front, Gull just absolutely smashes it. And who's still in the wheel? Hindley. And then the gap is solid to the next chaser. It's Ciccone and Buchmann. Those are the next two. Then we've got Martinez. Can we talk about Martinez sprinting for a KOM there for a second?
Oh, yeah. What? So, yeah, this is over the little Cat 3 Col de Cher, which is the little warm-up before Marie Blanc that breaks up the valley. And it's a Cat 3, as Benji said, 2 points, 1 point for first and second. And Van Aert, Nalens, and Alaphilippe ahead. Frail and AG2R have been riding full as tug buddies, trying to get him to catch Van Aert and Nalens. And he attacks at the top to try and get a KOM point that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Also, where did he come? He came second on the Sudé sprint, or maybe even not even second. Like, it seemed, I think sometimes if you want to win a stage, and you're not, you know, clearly the best, you should really just focus on winning the stage, particularly when your teammate is pulling for you to win the stage. Like, even if there was one KOM point there, like, really?
I agree. I think they should focus on the likes of Sudé and not on the smaller. But this is also a blatant mistake by the Ineos car. That's just bad research. If you have your rider in the breakaway sprinting for 0 points because there are riders on the road, you didn't do your job in researching that specific KOM point. Let's be honest about that.
I mean, I think he just, I don't know what they were doing.
It can't be his own decision to be like, I'm going to sprint for it. The team should have notified him that there's no points left and he shouldn't sprint for it.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, Hindley basically now has 230 on Marie Blanc. And now it's like the peloton advantage doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Because you needed to close Hindley down before Marie Blanc.
Yeah.
Because Hindley's going full beans as they get to the steep section over the top of Felix Gull. And he's pacing against Rafał Majka. And the draft is not as much anymore. So he's going to, UAE can't really close it down. I was waiting, Benji, and maybe this was a tell. I thought UAE, if Poggi felt really good, we're going to put Yates on the front like they did the other day on Hayescabel, mm-hmm. or like they did on Cote d'Epique. And I thought they were going to, because Micah wasn't going anywhere. Yep. He was not closing Hindley down.
Yeah.
And I thought that, and the pull from Yates never came.
Is this a consequence of what happened before in the stage, that they are with so limited riders at this point on Mont Blanc? Because yes, Adam Yates is there. Yes, Micah is there, but his pull is actually not as what you'd expect from a Micah. Then we look at Groschartner. Yeah, he came from the breakaway to help there a bit, but it wasn't a long pull in the first place. They spent Soler before, they spent Bjerg before, they spent Lengen before, which Lengen isn't going to make the difference here. Bjerg could make the difference on the first two grains of this climb, but not on the actual steep section. So I feel like UAE fucked it at the start of the stage by having a breakaway with Hindley in front in the first place.
Yeah, but once it's formed and it has 90 seconds, you're fucked.
What can you do, eh? If it has 40 seconds, you can't close down a 30-second man group. But
like, that's why when in these big valleys, rolling valleys, these big breaks get a gap. Yep. It can get out of control and get out of hand quickly. And so the camera changes to Hindley. Hindley's pulling with Goal. He drops Goal. And this is not a surprise. And this is why Benji, maybe we'll talk about it at the end, but I was surprised at the willingness of AG2R and Ineos and maybe Trek to work with the guy who came third on the Queen stage of the Dauphiné, who won the Giro last year. Like,
it depends.
I feel like they could have, like, did you ever think Martinez was dropping Hindley on Marie Blanc?
I agree with you. I think Ineos, completely right. I think Ajazer, O'Connor is already in the shadow realm in GC.
And Goal is fucking flying. Who knows what Goal can do? And Ciccone was good in the Dauphiné. So maybe Ineos is the one where it's like, really?
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have been countering? But if you don't make the move with Van Aert, it's too late. I don't know.
Because they're pulling these riders away from their potential GC riders. Yes, when it comes to GC riders, they're not overly impressive, except for one man on this climb. We'll get to that in a second. Because action's going on in the peloton.
But that's what I mean. Madawaz is not counted in that group. He has a GC rider.
Yep.
Ineos have a GC rider. Trek have a Schelmoser. Yep. O'Connor, as you said, O'Connor, it's like, okay, are you really going to make Goal not pull because of O'Connor? But Hindley, he full dropped Goal, right? It wasn't on the descent.
Yeah,
he went away with like 2Ks to go. Yeah.
But it's also expected that Hindley can drop Goal on that climb, to be honest.
Fadai was 4K, 5Ks, 10% for higher altitude. This is Hindley is really good at this sort of effort. And he didn't have to do too much in the breakaway. It wasn't like he was, like when the group was together, he was never in the wind. So he goes, and then the camera cuts back. We haven't seen, and we knew something might have happened. Keldegoat's gone. So something, the pace must have been pretty high. I think Kelderman must have been the man to put on the initial pace.
Or he had a bad day. We don't know.
Not possible. not accepted. I'm getting back in Luke's good books. He's gone. The group is suddenly 6-7 guys.
Yeah.
We see Rodriguez. Peacock is struggling. We see Pogacar's there with Yates. There's no UAE left anymore. Simon Yates is at the back. Who else was there from GC? Gaudu is there looking actually pretty good. And then it's Sepp Kuss just driving it for Vingegaard.
Absolutely driving it. But the first second we saw that, Pidcock was still at the back of the group.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was really fucking good, in my opinion. Yes.
He's in good shape.
We're not far into the climb yet, but so many people that you would expect there. Like, I would expect the Landers to still be
there. Yeah, Landers was gone.
He was in the shadow realm. I'm pretty sure there was someone else that was also already dropping at that point that we were shocked by. But
Adam Yates was going.
Yeah, Adam Yates was having trouble a bit later. Not necessarily at the Landa point. But Kuz was moving. Kuz was making moves. And it was not an easy pace. It was Kuz with Jonas in the wheel, with Pogacar in that wheel. So it once again confirms that Pogacar is the man for UAE because they put him in the wheel of Jonas. That shows that. But that was pretty obvious already. Adam Yates in the wheel of Pogacar. And we've got other riders and Kuz just keeps on going. And Kuz keeping up going thins out this group one by one by one. And it ends up with a group of, I think it was four riders, because Adam Yates, like you said, got in trouble at roughly this point in the race. And who was left? The guys we said, with Carlos Rodriguez. I was shocked that he was there, man. I'm so hyped about it.
Well, it's an incredible performance. But when you saw him in the earlier stages, I've never seen him look so skinny.
Yep.
He looked crazy skinny. Now maybe it's because he's not in the Spanish champs jersey anymore, and the white jersey's not as flattering, but his arms looked scary skinny. And so he was doing really, really well, Carlos Rodriguez. He actually, Rodriguez result here, he deserved better than a top 10. Yep. They're coming 10th. Rodriguez was actually stronger than that. So I'll be interested to see how he goes later on.
Yeah.
Kuss ramps up the pace. We get to, and but we're like, where is Van Aert? Where is Benoit? Benoit, we're seeing the time gaps start with Kuss pacing. The time gap to Hindley melts to 2 minutes now.
Yep.
It goes below 2 minutes, 150, 140. And then we're like, well, Van Aert's not making it over the top.
Yeah.
So he's waiting somewhere to do a death pull. And Benoit probably also not making it over the top. He was trying to, because the plateau is really important to have a satellite rider. And we see Van Aert do his pull. We were chopping and changing between Hindley and that. And I can't remember, had Van Aert finished and then Kuss went again, Benji?
Yeah, Kuss went again. And then it took still another, at least half a kilometer before we saw a move next to that. Because when Kuss had his pull done, we all know what's going to happen. Jonas Vingegaard attacks, past a car that was standing still on the road towards Benoit that was not ready to do anything at that point. Benoit was done for. And what do we see from Pogacar? Absolutely nothing when it comes to the reaction. I don't even think he tried to react to Jonas's attack because he probably realized, okay, I can't follow this man. I'm at my limit here. I'm at my threshold. This was where I need to ride tempo or I will lose 17 minutes today. And that's what he does. He rides tempo and we see the gap from Jonas to Pogacar expand quite a bit very quickly. And did it remain the same for a bit before it expanded?
I feel like Poggy did try to hold Vingegaard's pace initially. I think he wasn't out of the saddle, but for sure he lifted his watts.
Yeah.
And there's been at no point ever has Vingegaard got an initial gap on Pogacar, and Pogacar's closed it on the climb.
Yeah.
Von 2, he closed it on the descent.
Yeah.
But once the gap is there, now we're talking, okay, what will the gap be? Because
correct,
10 seconds isn't enough. 10 seconds with that plateau, if Vingegaard's isolated and Pogacar gets some allies, you can close that, no problem. So it's not a guarantee at that point. As you say, if Pogacar's riding conservatively and Vingegaard has to slow down after his attack, but Vingegaard has a few things in his favor. He goes past Benoit, gives him a thumbs up and says, yeah, good luck, buddy. But Vingegaard has a few things in his favor, sort of, initially. The breakaway has been dropped by Hindley and they're ahead. And they will make it over the top of the climb.
Yeah.
And so could he get a couple of pulls from people?
Ciccone
and Goal, who they catch up to? Maybe. Kuss comes back to Pogacar. That was the tell to me that he did actually slow down a little bit because Kuss has done a death lead-out pull. Pogacar's responded, and then Kuss has come back to him. That means to me Pogacar slowed down a bit. And so the second heli shot we see, the gap is really big.
And it's very difficult for us to know the exact gap because the time gaps were Italian time gaps. Like there were time gaps that went up and down depending on where the motorbike was on the road. And we didn't know how far the gap was between Vingegaard and Pogacar until we reached the top of the climb. So the situation at the top is simple. Hindley is ahead. Then we've got roughly a minute 10, roughly like that, a bit less than a minute 10 towards Jonas Vingegaard, who is trying to catch up with Ciccone and Gull and will do that just after the top. And then there is a gap of 37 seconds from Jonas Vingegaard to Tadej Pogacar. 37 seconds for Pogacar to lose on the Col du Mari Blanc. For me, that's extremely worrying for the rest of the Tour de France. Because this is a climb that, on paper, if Pogacar is at his peak, he can compete with Vingegaard with.
No. Poggy went 50 seconds quicker than he did in 2020 on the climb.
Yeah, but these are the climbs where he needs to do it because on the longer climbs, the gap is going to be bigger.
Exactly. No, I agree with your overall point. I agree. If he is to win the Tour and you get dropped on this, now you have big problems because Puy de Dôme is harder, longer, and finishes at the top.
Yeah.
So to your point, I agree, 100% agree with your point that it's not a good sign for Pogacar. But yeah, it was, for people wanting to know, you know, how does this compare Pogacar's level? I think that narrative will start now that Pogacar's only got dropped because he had a wrist injury, which, listen, he may not be in the best shape possible. I've been saying that for a while, that, you know, I think it must have had an effect. But the reality is Jonas went 80 seconds quicker on this climb than they did in 2020, where they had, I think, a tailwind and where they went full beans. Jumbo drove the base on the shallow section. Like, so it wasn't a slow time. And Poggy's gone 45 seconds quicker than that. So I think the reality is this climb shows that Vingegaard is better than him on the climbs.
Well, We knew that on longer climbs he was better, but now it's also clear at the moment. He's better on versatile terrain as well, which that's a terrain where Pogacar had to strike to be able to do something.
Yeah.
And from this point onwards, the gap keeps increasing between Jonas and Pogacar, because at first I thought this is going to stay relatively equal because now they're going up on top and then in the descent and so forth. But Vingegaard reaches Ciccone and so forth. Ciccone not riding at all. The gap starting to become under a minute. I was kind of surprised that Ciccone was not riding at all, even though Skelmos is behind, even though Hindley is ahead. I see no point in Ciccone not riding there because you might as well try to still win the stage.
Why chase Hindley on your own? And then when someone helps you chase Hindley, stop chasing Hindley. Yeah. In the last 2Ks, don't pull if Hindley's already gone. But yeah, I thought I also think Benji, he couldn't. Vingegaard was pulling like a truck. We saw when Ciccone in gold, when they caught them, they tried to get back in the pace line. And I think Ciccone did try to give him a pull and then he shook his head like, fuck, man, I can't pull as quick as this. You're pulling like a truck. So, and that's the situation. Hindley goes clear, brilliant performance. We should talk about him first, I think. Hindley, masterclass from Bora, dropped everybody and played them before Marie Blanc and then was too classy on Marie Blanc. His descending was also the best in the breakaway this whole stage. And also, it's not easy on that 8K false flat uphill drag to just hold a gap. And he actually was holding that gap stable to Vingegaard in the last 3 kilometers. He wins the stage, his first Tour de France win. Bora will be very happy to get on the board and also takes the yellow jersey and with a big gap over a lot of other GC contenders. So this is the dream scenario for Bora today.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the moment we had the Torino coup in the Giro 2020,
last year, yeah.
Yeah, 2022, that's the right year. The coup where they had riders in the breakaways, Zwihav and so forth, then they attacked on a hill somewhere in the middle of the stage and got something out of there for Hindley as well. That was one stage. And then today, once again, a coup from start to finish. Gasparotto's in the car. I feel like there's coincidence there. As in, there's no coincidence there. As in, I feel Gasparotto is actively working on making Takis at Bora better.
And you need some cojones.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a risk that Hindley gets caught before Marie Blanc. He's been doing a lot of work all day. And he gets dropped by the other GC contenders. I don't think it's that likely, but you know, there's risks to what Hindley did too. And they get rewarded because if you stay in the GC group, you don't win the stage. You have no chance to win the stage and you actually take more time this way. So really a masterclass from Bora, and Hindley's in top shape. Winning the stage, Gold, Ciccone and Buchmann obviously sit on Vingegaard in the last 2 kilometers. He extends the gap actually on the flat section to Pogacar. And this is what's important. We were discussing this on the watch along, Benji.
Yep.
Fresh, both on a road bike, on a false flat section, Pogacar has an advantage on Vingegaard.
Yep.
Because he's heavier and he does more absolute watts. But when you've just been dropped and when you're cooked and the other guy's feeling it, you know, you will lose more time. We saw in Basque Country that Vingegaard's not, you know, he's not coos. Like he goes quick too on these sections. So Vingegaard extends the gap. That group, Ciccone, Gol take the bonus second and third for the stage. Buchmann fourth. Vingegaard, actually, they put him on 2 seconds. There was a gap of over a second from Buchmann to Vingegaard. He finishes on 34 seconds to Hindley, 1 minute and 4 seconds ahead of a GC group behind of Schelmoser, Martinez, Pogacar, Gaudu, Rodriguez, Haig, Kuss, Simon Yates, Madouas, Adam Yates. I thought Adam Yates should have pulled in the group earlier to get back to Pogacar. It might have made 1 second difference.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of people in that group should have paced more than they did.
Madouas should have waited for Gaudu at the top.
Yeah, exactly. He waited way too late. Simon Yates should have been pacing. Well, when it comes to other riders in the group, I don't remember who was in there, by the way. Skelmos, we caught up. He should be pacing. He was pacing. He was a really active rider there. His descending is actually outrageous. Like
Skelmos is mad, yeah.
He's a fucking good descender. That is insane. Like, this guy's ascending the way he did it at Tour de Suisse, this time again, because he was dropped by those guys on top, got back to the group. That is massive. But would you say that with Adam Yates at this point being in that group with Pogacar, you see that Adam Yates is pacing Pogacar to the line in the last kilometer, for example, but does this change UAE's view on the race towards, we're now trying to secure position second and third in this Tour de France after seeing this? Or do you think they'll still try to hammer the entire Tour de France to get Pogacar on top?
That's a really interesting question because, you know, let's be honest, UAE got humbled today.
Yeah.
UAE have been, you know, they had a good start to the Tour de France. They won the opening stage with Adam Yates going into yellow. Couldn't have been a better start. And, you know, everything going well. And then they took it upon themselves to make the race today and didn't really look to Jumbo to,
yeah,
to control. And they were going to go for this stage to win with Pogacar, and Vingegaard has just ruined Pogacar. And yep, so, you know, people did laugh at when I said Adam Yates. I said that mainly because I didn't believe in a 1v1 battle without them crashing that Pogacar could win this tour.
Yeah.
And so they needed to do something else. And
I didn't believe in the other thing.
But Adam Yates, frankly, isn't at the level either because he got dropped by Koos pacing, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and what, Adam Yates is going to get in the break today and Jumbo are going to let that happen and play out. Like, so, you know, would it have made a difference? No. But that was why I was sort of on that train of thought. And you're right, what do they do now? Because you can't chase for the stage on Puy de Dôme.
Did we go through the GC already?
We haven't.
I'll do that. Jai Hindley, first, yellow jersey now because of the actions of today. 47 seconds on Jonas Vingegaard. We've got a minute 03 on Ciccone. That's an interesting one because now Skelmos and Ciccone are both in the top 10 for Trek. Curious if they will still play Ciccone breakaway or will they actually go for GC as well, top 10. I'm not 100% convinced after today when it comes to Ciccone GC, but Buchmann in fourth also moved forward. Terrifying, but a minute 11 behind. I feel like he didn't get the opportunity to work for Hindley and prove that he's that teammate either today. He was there to do it, but other teams did it for him all the time.
Oh, I think Buchmann did a good job today.
Yeah.
I think if he's not there, a proper rouleur split goes at some point and Hindley's gone.
He was clearly there to help out Hindley in the first place.
No,
so that's
a
very solid thing. So he deserves that credit. Adam Yates in fifth on 1:34. Pogacar in sixth on 1:40. So a 6-second difference between the two teammates. Skelmose and Simon Yates are behind it. Simon Yates on the same time as Tadej Pogacar on 7th. Skelmos on 1:56 on 8th. Carlos Rodriguez on 9th, same time. And then we've got Godu as well on same time, 1:56 on 10th.
But you see what I mean for Carlos? Like if this finished at the top, he's 5th on 1:30 or something.
About Carlos, he crashed next to his team bus after the race. Doesn't look too injured, but he was knocked off his bike by, I think, a spectator or something.
That's so shit.
Let's hope it has no influence because that's just fucking stupid. That's annoying. And
he's
I hope,
crashed so much this year.
Yeah. But hopefully that means nothing for the coming stages. Riders like Woods on 11th and so forth, those are riders that I expect to fall even more once the stages become harder, even though
we haven't had
it was pretty okay today.
I mean, Soudé's over a 30-minute climb, but we haven't really had... this wasn't even a long climb, and already this huge GC gap. So Jumbo-Visma-Benji, you know, in hindsight, you could say Jumbo-Visma should have never tried to get in the breakaway.
Yeah.
And they should have paced full gas and made a manageable break with Van Aert and Benoit and launched Vingegaard and Marie Blanc to win the stage. And now they wouldn't have to deal with Hindley being ahead.
On the opposite effect, you can also say that them not pacing in the peloton and being ahead made the breakaway a bit more harder to catch. And therefore, UAE spent more riders before they got to Marie Blanc in the first place. That's also a possibility. But regardless of that, Pogacar would have dropped the way he dropped. Maybe not the same time, but he would have dropped regardless.
Yeah. I don't know. It's that sort of, you know, that's only if you really, really think Jonas will drop Pogacar. And even if you do, I think you want to have satellite riders.
Yep.
Okay, what I did think Jonas could drop Pogacar today. I did not expect the gap to be so big.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, 10 seconds, but what's 10 seconds going to get you?
It's a fucking minute, mate.
Yeah, I know, but I thought if it's 10 seconds and Vingegaard doesn't have a satellite rider, then it could just be close. And so really that was why the satellite riders I thought were important in the breakaway ahead and making UAE make the race. So, you know, at least, it's nearly a minute. So over a minute from Vingegaard to Pogacar. So what do you think? I think now the next step for Vingegaard is Hindley. I think you have to take time on someone that's ahead of you. That's just rule number one of GC. You have to respect him. You have to respect his quality. And so I think now you have to treat Hindley very, very seriously. You can't just be like, we'll take it back. You cannot have that attitude.
Yeah, I'm not sure tomorrow is the moment to do that either. I also think that they should still keep an eye on Pogacar as well.
Of course, you must also defend against Pogacar.
because Pogacar is still one of the competitors for this Tour de France, regardless of him being a minute behind now, just under a minute behind now. So Hindley's the next step for Vingegaard, while keeping track of Pogacar along the way, and maybe some other dangerous riders behind, but those are the two main focuses right now. But will they be doing that on tomorrow's stage yet? I'm not sure that's the ideal scenario, because I'll let you talk through the parcours first.
From Taub to Cotteret-Cambasque. Now, Vuelta stage finished here, even though it's in France, and the Vuelta actually returns to France this year. So Rasmussen, Zula, and Indurain, and maybe Rees did some big numbies here. And I don't know if that was in the Tour, but Rasmussen, I think, in the Vuelta finished on Cotteret. So I think this is a harder stage than people think.
I can't believe that when it comes to this stage, you're focusing on Cotteret. Tourmalet is my history when it comes to cycling.
I don't know what's ever happened on Tourmalet.
2010, Contador versus Schleck on the Tourmalet was amazing.
Maybe we do need maybe for this Tour, we do need that SRAM drop chain for Jonas. It
probably
just make him angry.
Netflix would be happy.
Yeah, Netflix, I think, will be pretty happy with how this week's gone so far. But yeah, the first 56 kilometers are largely flat. There is a Category 3 climb, 5.7Ks, 4.7%. In the middle of that, starts with about 25Ks to go. I think the break will probably form there. Now, the problem for that is that's only about 25Ks before the Col d'Aspin starts, which is 12Ks, 6.6%. Then not that steep a descent. And then they start the Tourmalet, as Benji said, 17Ks, 7.4%. It's the Souvenir Jacques Gaudet, 5K euro to the first person over the top, 21,000 meters, which is quite high for this Tour.
Yeah.
Then a descent to the base of Cotteret, which is a stepped climb. It's actually a fake news climb a little bit, because it's 16Ks, 5%. The first 3Ks of 5% or so, then there's this 8% K, and then it falls flat uphill, and then there's 4%, and then there's a 3K 10% section through the hairpins nearer to the finish before another 4, and before 5% for a couple of Ks to the finish. So listen, this is not the Col de Granon stage. The Tourmalet is not as hard as this is not as hard as the Telegraph Galibier combo. Mm-hmm. That's harder and higher. The descent and the time from the top of Tourmalet to the start of Cotteret is quicker than the top of Galibier to the start of Granon.
Mm-hmm.
But this climb is in no way comparable to Granon, this finish.
Yeah.
And so that's the problem for this stage.
I think so as well. And also I recall hearing that there's headwind from the top of Tourmalet towards Cotteret as well.
I don't know how
heavy that's going to be and so forth. But if that's the case, then that has an influence. And when it comes to the stage, I said it from the start when I saw it, this is breakaway. But after that, I'm also feeling like if you're Jumbo and you're seeing Pogacar's weakness, you want to use week one. So at least Puy de Dôme, they need to use full big time to try and gain even more time on Pogacar. And if there's any stages like that anymore, then they need to do that. But if this is the one, I don't necessarily think this might be the one to absolutely explode it, even though I'd love it as a viewer. I'd love for someone to explode Tourmalet to try and get something like that out of it. The difference is, though, that Yui is not the one that needs to control the break now. Jumbo needs to control the break.
And Bora do. They will take it. You think Bora will let Pogacar and UAE start?
They will both have to control the break.
I know, but Jumbo will get out of it. First of all, Jai Hindley podiuming this Tour is now more likely than not.
Can he even get second?
Exactly. He's in yellow. They have a good-as-fuck team with Jungels, Buchmann, Conrad. Their team is very good. I think Bora will also be like, we're not going to allow situations to happen that we don't want. So
when it comes to their team, we have focused mainly on UAE and Jumbo, but let's go through this team for a second. Obviously, Hindley, Buchmann, and Conrad, we've seen them today. Jungels is in there, fucking strong rider.
Yeah.
Meus, Pollitt, Van Poppel. Pollitt is good for breakaway formation phase.
Yes.
Van Poppel and Meus, they've got flat skill.
They can also help
in
break formation tomorrow.
I agree. Marco Haller can work with that as well.
Sure.
So they've got a team to also help with the breakaway formation phase, and they might switch a bit in that sense. But I will re-say again what I said during the podcast, and I'm not sure you 100% agree with it, but I still believe that UAE's fuck up next to the fact that Pogacar wasn't good enough was also to let that breakaway go. Because you're saying, if the break has that many seconds, yes, but a 36-man breakaway, Jumbo-Visma wouldn't have let a 36-man breakaway with Hindley go away at any point during the Tour last year, for example.
Oh, yeah. So what you're saying is, if you want to win the stage with Pogacar and take the bonies, you make sure a group of five guys you can control easily goes.
Or even if it's a breakaway that wins the stage. If it doesn't have Hindley, yeah, that's a big win.
I am convinced they still wanted the bonies.
If that's the case, sure. But even regardless of that, if you want to give the yellow jersey away, which I think would have been a good strategy as well today, but not to Hindley, then that's the case. So I still believe they fucked up there. We've said it for, was it 2 years or a year that we've been talking about their breakaway formation phase being an issue for UA. And it shows up once again today that this is a major issue now. It doesn't matter in the end.
But back to tomorrow. We were talking about tomorrow's stage.
It doesn't matter because Pogacar was worse than Vingegaard anyway.
Yeah, but I think the stage being overall more difficult
is
always going to make the gaps bigger.
Yeah.
Not that it was like the most brutal stage ever for the GC guys and the wheels either. But tomorrow, you know, as we said, the finishing climb isn't so hard. Benji said headwind from Tourmalet to the base of Courtrai.
Benji thinks headwind.
Yeah, Benji, weatherman Benji's guaranteed headwind. So there'll be a 70 kph tailwind.
Actually, it's going to have thunder, lightning, major hail.
I hope not. Okay. Like in Andorra. I mean, if it's anything, it's not far from here. It's like only 3 hours away. Anyway, but more inland. I actually don't know what's going to happen tomorrow because...
Break wins.
Yeah, but it's such a short stage, 145 Ks. And if the break only forms on that first cat three, and then another team is starting to pull...
And will teams be tired from today?
No.
No?
No. There's guys in the breakaway doing a lot of work. The guys in the break will be tired, like a Haig, like a Jorgensen, maybe, like a Martinez, like a Fraile. But Jumbo, why would most of Jumbo's team, like Van Baal or Van Hooijdonk, be that tired?
Exactly. Keldergoat, he barely pulled.
Keldergoat split the grip. I will not hear that. I think, but then can you drop, if you're Jumbo, can you drop Hindley on the Tourmalet? And if Vingegaard drops him on the Tourmalet, then you've got a long way to the finish. If Vingegaard drops Hindley, Benji, does Hindley pull full gas with Godu in his wheel, with Rodriguez in his wheel, with Schelmoser or Pogacar in his wheel? Or does he already start thinking second? He's in the yellow. I think he pulls, and I think Poggi pulls with him.
Fuck it. I'll change my expectations for tomorrow completely. I think if I'm Jumbo, I do everything in my power to explode Tourmalet. I try and get an early guy in the breakaway, whether it's Wout van Aert, whether it's Benoit. Laporte maybe is not good enough for this. I will think so.
Laporte, though, remember, he was the guy over the top of Telegraph.
But Telegraph is not Aspin plus Tourmalet, because you need someone behind Tourmalet. You don't need someone on Aspin.
No, but I don't know how you get a guy over the top.
Because
it's going to be impossible. I don't think to get a guy over the top is going to be extremely... Yeah. The break will have to go in the first 10Ks to get a guy over the top.
I agree.
Because... You're not going to drop Hindley and Pogacar or anyone because if the break's only 2 minutes ahead, we better do the Tourmalet slow. Well, then you're not going to drop anybody.
But if you then explode on the Tourmalet yourself as Jumbo, then you've got 50 kilometers to the finish line from the top of Tourmalet. It also won't be easy, but it's also not impossible.
Courtrai will be hard. That is a hard climb. Solo.
Depends on what happens behind.
16 Ks with undulating uphill.
Is there no way anyone gets ahead that makes it over to Tourmalet?
I think it's possible. But it would have to be like Kelderman or someone. Like Van Aert's climbing, frankly, to me, is not looking as good as last year. So
if we compare today's breakaway formation to this breakaway formation, if it's like today, then the breakaway might not be formed by Aspin. But then again, you've got Cavaillé-les-Bains, which I feel like that might be the moment where the break forms, or just after that climb. And then you've still got... If they can close it down within the next 30 kilometers, the gap can be 3 minutes, 4 minutes before Col d'Aspin.
You never make it. You're like 3 minutes before Aspin, because then everyone will pace full. Do you think UAE will try to strike back tomorrow?
Yeah, but what you're saying is 3-4 minutes on before Aspin. Let's say you've got that. Sure. In the peloton, what will they do then? Because let's say...
They will do Aspin at the same speed as the breakaway. Because it will be a rouleur pacing, like a Van Baal or a Soler or something.
So 3-4 minutes, I spent at the same tempo as the breakaway.
And then you lose time on the descent.
Lose time on the descent. 4 minutes, 4 minutes and a half before we start Tourmalet. You'd need to actually have action.
Break guy'd have to be pretty good, man.
Yes, but...
It's a 50-minute climb. I agree with you. It's possible. But it would have to... A lot of things would have to work out. The break guy has to be really good.
Ciccone wins.
You're like, yeah, I've got... He's too close on GC. He's not allowed to break.
Yeah, you're right. Fuck.
But he was close on GC. But he was on 43 seconds today and he was allowed to break.
Yeah, but that's different because UAE was controlling the breakaway.
Yeah, but will Jumbo care if Giulio Ciccone goes in the breakaway?
Hindley will.
Actually, maybe do. Yeah. Let's not do Hindley again.
Who's the kind of rider? Because Bernal's on 4 minutes. That would be fucking great if Bernal goes in the breakaway. But yeah, I don't see him as the kind of rider to pull it off. Bilbao was on 3:30.
I think someone like Hague's level will win from the break.
Martinez, 16 minutes.
Yeah, Martinez is a good one. Did he lose a lot of time? Okay, I'm going with Martinez.
He moved up in GC.
Actually,
16 minutes.
I think the GC group wins. And I think it's, I think probably Vingegaard wins because he outsprints people. Like,
yep.
Not Poggy, but I think Poggy will struggle again. So I'm going with Vingegaard to win.
I find it the most likely scenario, but I want the breakaway to win.
Yep.
I'm going to say...
Juanpe.
Not Juanpe, get out of here. When it comes to Pidcock, is an interesting one because he's on 12th in GC, if I recall correctly,
too,
or something. He's too close. But again, well, 2:30.
Is he on 2:30?
Pidcock goes in the break and wins the stage.
His shape is really good.
But Ineos doesn't do that shit.
No, he will.
Ineos will put Martinez in the break and not Pidcock.
Yeah, Bernal. Ineos will try to be in the break. It might be someone like Pidcock. Madouaz is also a nice rider for this sort of finish, given the undulations. Felix Gall will try again.
Bilbao or Pidcock.
If the break wins, I go with Felix Gall. I think he can't feel the chain right now. I go with Gall. The problem for Gall is that he can't go solo on Tourmalet because he can't descend. That's the problem for him. Alrighty. Let us know your questions down below. Do we have anything else? I mean, is the Tour de France over? Not yet, but if this is happening on this stage, it doesn't bode well for the later stages. But I also think let's not just assume that Jai Hindley
is weak.
Is going to, you know, ship, is Juanpe in the Giro. Sorry, I keep bashing Juanpe. I don't mean to, but, you know.
He was a hero to us.
Yeah, when El Patron led the Giro or Odd Christian Eiking led the Vuelta, this is not that caliber of rider. No. This is a serious guy. Let's not just, and Bora are going to fight tooth and nail to keep that GC position. So you could have the situation where Buchmann is pulling very hard with Pogačar and Hindley to chase the solo escapade ahead. So.
To finalize this podcast, we've had a major shift in how the Tour de France looks right now. What is your podium at the end of this Tour de France based on today's stage?
Vingegaard, Hindley, Pog. Pog was still better than everybody else.
Yeah.
But for Pog to beat Hindley to come second, he almost needs to forget about Jonas now. And I don't think he's going to be ready to do that.
If we take a look at time trial skills, for example, 13th in the time trial of Dauphiné, he's gotten better Hindley.
Yeah, he's not a scrub in the TT.
But I think Pogačar gets second because of the time trial.
Yeah, but Pogačar could flick himself in other stages.
Obviously, he could like go all out in one stage. He could do what I proposed on the preview, be behind by stage 20, do a 90-kilometer solo, because that's my scenario. It's still in the cards.
This is why I didn't pick him for the podium. I thought he would struggle early on or on the longer climbs. I don't think he's going to accept, okay, I'll ride to maximize to come second and he'll get played by guys who are on a good level like Jai Hindley or someone like that. Adam Yates, that pick though, that one's not looking so crash hot for me. Adam Yates is still in provisional third because Ciccone and Buchmann might drop before. So Adam Yates is looking all right.
It's not looking all right.
It's not looking good. Not looking good, bruv. All right, it's been a long podcast. Obviously an outstanding stage. We won't have a watch along tomorrow because it's just a little bit too tiring, but we will be back for Puy de Dôme on the weekend, stage 9. So really hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thanks for all your support. And we'll be back with another brutal mountain stage tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.